It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, the 95% always, is my co-host, Steven Brown. And Davis Miller's back.
Yep, I'm here.
And Davis came in to talk about a very specific topic, which we might not even get to, because after we decided to do this podcast, the news came out that Zack Snyder is stepping down from Justice League, which is set to debut in about 4 months from now.
Yeah.
And Joss Whedon is stepping in.
And I have 100 questions about this.
That's how I feel, too. There's just so many ways it can go. Now, to get it out of the way, we opened with suicide last week. Yeah. And the reason Zack Snyder is stepping down is that his daughter committed suicide. So, out of respect, we're not going to shit on Zack Snyder.
Exactly, yeah.
Well,
we can talk talk about how he made those movies.
People are being really shitty to this guy online.
Well, people are saying good.
And they're monsters.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, this guy's never made a movie that I've enjoyed, but he's still a human being. You know what I mean? And it's
That's like, exactly how I feel about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like I could disagree with his directing choices or his aesthetics or whatever you want to call it.
But
like,
I never wish that upon him.
He's not a bad guy.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I think he might be a bit of a, you know, overrated hack, but that doesn't mean he's a bad person.
That
or
doesn't mean he deserves a family tragedy.
Yeah, exactly.
And he certainly doesn't deserve this family tragedy, so we get a better movie than we were expecting.
Yeah, I think that's a really messed up thing to say. And furthermore, I had heard, maybe this is true, maybe this isn't, that I had read somewhere that the Justice League movie had undergone such extensive reshoots already that it's unrecognizable from the trailer they released months ago. That they said that's how different the movie is.
Well, the other thing is, Joss Whedon has said he is doing reshoots. I mean, the movie comes out in November, so it's got a release date. So it's not like he's not starting from scratch.
No, totally. Like, but how much time does it take to make a $100 million movie or whatever?
Right, and that's the interesting thing. We're at such a late stage in the game. Late state.
It's early.
State of Lage is beautiful. Low taxes. he's at such a late stage of the game that he is doing post, and he said he's doing some reshoots. So what's going to be interesting is just how much Joss Whedon is going to be in this. So you're going to have this fusion of Batman versus Superman, which many of us consider to be the worst superhero movie
ever.
Oh, it's
garbage, yeah.
And Avengers, which people in this room consider the best superhero movie ever.
Yeah.
So it's when you're mixing those two elements together, what are you going to get?
Why do you think the studio wanted to go with Joss Whedon?
Name recognition, honestly.
Right, yeah. That makes sense on their
end. He was already signed to do Batgirl. Remember, they announced that last month.
Yeah.
So he's already working at Warner Brothers on their DC properties.
So,
of course,
he's the team guy that made the Avengers happen, so...
Right, and the Avengers made $1 billion, which is why DC is doing all of this backwards. You know, which is why they're not taking time to do Superman... Well... They did Superman and Green Lantern. They want us to forget that.
Yeah, I guess Green Lantern's not supposed to count, but I guess Superman does.
But they said they haven't decided because they have yet to recast Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
And there are several people at the studio that want Ryan Reynolds to come back.
After Deadpool, they would be stupid.
Because now
not
he's
to
a big name.
Yeah. I think they'll have to recast him, though, just for like Deadpool reasons, I'm sure.
Well, didn't they use Amanda Waller in Green Lantern? It was a completely different
they
character.
They did, yeah.
Well, I think that's out of continuity now, right?
Well, or if they cast him, it won't
be. Well, that's
be.
The question, and we're not... And they pulled they pushed the Green Lantern movie to the end, and they made a Green Lantern core, which there have been hints that it's going to be like Jon Stewart and Guy Gardner. So they might just avoid Hal altogether, but they don't know. You can tell they're going movie by movie by movie.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So, at the very least, I think Joss will come in and give the characters a little more life than they had in Batman versus
Superman. I'm sure they'll try to have him mimic the style at least, you know, make his scenes not stick out like a sore thumb.
It'd be nice
I mean,
to
they're
see
gonna
a
be
character
wearing the
crack
same
a joke or smile.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. They'll obviously be wearing the same costumes. It'll have the same lighting structure to each set. It's not gonna be a new movie in the middle of it. Although, which, you know, is kind of what happened with Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say.
Director.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, even though Joss Whedon's style, I think, is much better than Zack Snyder's. It could be, you know, even worse than just having a coherent movie if it's just, yeah, like, if it's just grim and then, you know, every once in a while it's like a Joss Whedon scene.
Yeah, right. I think that's my issue. I think it's going to be such... The movie, I think, wasn't going to be not a train wreck, you know, a year ago. But I think now it's like he's... Davis is saying, it's like, look, we had Joss Whedon come in and do, you know, a third of the movie after this other director who has a very different style did two-thirds of the movie. And then it's going to get edited together in kind of a rush because we only have 4 months left to do all this shit. And I just, why is this movie not getting pushed back 6 months?
Because they think it's going to be a hit. Warner Brothers doesn't have anything else on their release schedule. The only other franchise they have right now is Fantastic Beasts, which they had to twist J.K. Rowling's arm because she was like, I'm done with Harry Potter. And they were like, but billions of dollars. And now she's writing five of them. But that's all they have right now. I mean, they're not doing anything with Looney Tunes.
But I've also heard rumors that Warner Brothers doesn't like care if those DC movies bomb. They're just like, yeah, we've got enough stuff on our plate. This is just like a small... But that doesn't seem like...
Well, no. That doesn't seem right to me.
No. What I've read is they're not going to sink the studio.
Oh.
So if these movies bomb, Warner Brothers is not going to go out of business the way Marvel will.
Right.
Although now that Marvel's owned by Disney.
Yeah.
But they want them to be hits because they don't have... big franchises. They're hurting from the loss of Harry Potter, which they have brought back from the dead with a movie that I thought was fine, but I thought it was like Hunger Games fine. It's like, I'll watch the next one, but I'm not excited.
Is Hunger Games over?
Yeah, Hunger Games finally. Is done.
Actually, there is another series though, Divergent. Have you heard about this at all?
I heard the last one bombed so hard that they don't want
to
finish it.
Yeah, so this is bizarre to me, but like this, it's like a teen book series has been irrelevant for like 2 years at this point.
Yeah.
So they tried to do a Hunger Games with it, where they tried to like do the, you know, first two books as movies and then do the third movie as like two parts. But then the first part bombed so hard that now they have to make the second part a made for TV movie with different actors.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, so like, why even continue?
Exactly.
Just give up.
Just for the
this is fascinating. It's a fascinating trend.
Well, when I was a kid, they did the animated Lord of the Rings, which is crazy. But it was supposed to be two movies because it ends at the end of the Battle of Helm's Deep.
Yeah.
And then it bombed so hard that they just never made it.
They animated Lord of the Rings? Or is that the
Hobbit? The animated Lord of the Rings.
Didn't they make a musical version?
They ended up going back to the company, to Rankin Bass, who had made the animated Hobbit.
Oh.
And then they made an animated version of just Return of the King. So there was like half of Two Towers that was never made.
Oh,
like the whole fight with Shelob was never animated. So growing up, reading the books, when I went to watch the movies, there was just a big hole in the middle.
Yeah.
So I think that's what they don't want to do with Divergent. It's like, at least finish it. But if they can't even get the same cast back.
Right, it's terrible.
It's like I could see if it's a made-for-TV movie and they're like on old Star Trek Enterprise sets.
Right.
They're just like, oh, the room looks kind of different now. But to just hire some Canadians.
Yeah, exactly. I'm interested to see how that goes. I think that'll be a glorious train wreck.
Yeah, it's like sometimes it's kind of nice to see just how bad some of this stuff is going
to
get.
I love to watch things go bad.
Yeah, let's just see. Just take this down to the end of the runway and see what she'll do.
We were just discussing how the worst collections in my movie collection are sequels to movies I like. And it's the reason I never quit characters. So I have boxes and boxes of Spider-Man and Batman comics that I know are terrible, but I want to see it just turn. And we were talking about I'm building up my iTunes library now and starting to get out of discs. And Davis was just, I got Alien and Aliens yesterday, and Davis just asked me, are you going to get Resurrection and Alien 3? And I was like, well, not now, no, but eventually.
You know you will.
Yeah, if I was into Divergent, I would totally be excited for that made TV, right? For TV movie.
I don't think anyone is. I think that everyone's aged out, and then the new group of people who would be into it are just not into it.
Gonna be like,
everyone's into those fidget spinners. That's all people are into now.
That's all they do in the movie. They just like have fidget spinners, and then sparks come out of them.
You know what fidget spinners were in my day? Cigarettes.
That's true.
That's what fidget spinners were.
I mean, they
put them out on your arm.
I mean, they still got drug problems at our school,
I guess.
Because everyone's into those. I mean, I guess now it's Davis Talks Complains About High School, the podcast. But everyone's got those like little vape things. And they're small enough that like some people can like put them in their pencil case and then just use it like it kind of looks like a pen. So yeah, that's...
It's incredible.
I could yell at vaping for like an hour.
Right. We could do a whole podcast.
Everyone's
about
such
it.
An asshole about it.
Yeah, it's like, because it combines hipster douchebag with high tech hipster douchebag.
Yeah.
We got to get back on track.
They all look like sonic screwdrivers because they have buttons and valves where they don't need them. And then they make a big deal. Like they're always
they have conventions.
They always like wipe, swing their arm out.
Yeah.
And then make me walk through a cloud of it. And I'm like, it's lemon peel. What the fuck?
Right.
Is that?
Yeah.
And vape stores are all like, they were all mobile stores 2 years ago.
Right.
They're like the kind of store.
You know what they are? They were beeper stores 15 years ago, 30 years ago, or whatever, whenever beepers were big.
Yeah. And if they close in September, they'll all be Halloween stores.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
We gotta get back onto Age of Apocalypse.
I'll take fidget spinners. Yes.
We
haven't started the topic yet. We're still talking about Justice League.
Oh yeah, one more point I want to make about Justice League, I guess, before we end.
I'm not nearly done about Justice League.
Never mind. But I was gonna say one of the things that I think that's really been annoying me out of this, because we were talking about this earlier, how it's like, you know, even if we disagree with Zack Snyder, it's awful that this happened to him. It seems like a lot of like news websites are kind of taking advantage of the situation and like using like really malicious, like, clickbait, where it's just like, Zack Snyder leaves Justice League, and then they exclude the part where it's like, because, you know, he had this horrible family tragedy. I think that's
so their side.
Click here to find out why.
It's just really shitty to do, because I think it's taking advantage of a really terrible situation and, like, a legitimate reason to leave, you know, the movie.
Yeah, clickbait is becoming really awful. Yeah. I haven't spoken about this, but it's been making me madder and madder the last couple of years. Comicbookresources.com used to be the best source of comic book news.
Yeah.
And within the last year, they changed their name to CBR.com. Yeah. And not only is every single article clickbait, which, I mean, I remember this site in like 2001. I remember people talking about Ben Affleck Daredevil on the site. It goes way back in terms of internet. But not only is it all clickbait, but then you click on it and there's five banners which then crash your browser.
Oh, yeah. Right? No. Yeah, you can't even run it on your phone.
Yeah,
it just crashes.
I don't even go to that website anymore. In fact, it's like as soon as like you click on an article, it's like, oh, this looks interesting. And you click, it's like 20 things that blah, 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 blah. And then it's like, they don't just list the 20 things. You have to click and reload the page. Mm-hmm. It's like.
So they get more hits.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It's like, it's always a listicle of 15, but there's one on every page.
Yeah, it's like such a game.
I mean, honestly, the best place at this point for comic book stuff, for me at least, is there's the comic book subreddit on Reddit. Hmm. And it's just like, and it's because it's just people like, you know, find stuff and they just, you know, bring it in. And it's like, there's no like bullshit. It's just like, oh, here's a Runaways teaser that I found online here. You know,
yeah,
we'll talk about this.
I follow as many comic creators as possible on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I do that on Instagram
too. And then I kind of see it make an arc. And honestly, we've gotten a lot of guests that way.
Yeah.
Because I'll follow them on Twitter and then strike up a conversation.
Well, it kind of shows, too, like you said, if people in the industry are posting stuff, it shows from the industry side, like, what's trending. But
right,
that Joss Whedon, Zack Snyder thing, like, broke pretty early, and I thought it was, like, a hoax. Do you know what I mean? I thought it was, like, April Fool's joke.
Well, it's such an extreme.
That's what I'm saying, because it's not even the suicide thing. I mean, just, like,
but just those two
Zack Snyder replaced by Joss Whedon just seems like such
those
bullshit.
Those two names
seems like an Onion article.
Yeah, it really does.
Like, even if they said Zack Snyder replaced by Jon Favreau, I'd be like, oh, maybe that's real.
Right.
But, like, Joss Whedon is, like,
such a
polar opposite. Like, like we said, it's what people consider to be the best Marvel director is taking over for the worst Marvel DC movie.
Yeah. Right.
So, but the thing about these movies, they're big ocean liners, so as hard as he can work, they take a long time to turn around.
Yeah.
Right.
So
it's very much going to feel and look like
Well, he said he's going to stick with Zack Snyder's tone because, I mean, Joss Whedon is a quality filmmaker. He's not Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith would come in and dump a bunch of Kevin Smith garbage in the middle of a Zack Snyder movie and go, hey, man, I directed Justice League. Here it goes. Yeah, that's my Kevin Smith is actually not that bad. Just need an oversized hockey shirt.
Yeah. Right.
And a baseball cap turned around to cover my balls.
And sound of lighting a blunt on your shirt.
Yeah, and some jorts.
And sound of vaping.
Yeah.
And some jorts.
Yeah.
Good old jorts.
Yeah, so Joss is going to look at this as a whole and go, like, how can I finish this movie?
Yeah.
He's not going to go, like, hey, how can I turn Justice League into Avengers?
Right.
Like, I'm sure there are people that are thinking, like, he's the Kurt Busiek of filmmakers. Like, he's going to come in and just do JLA Avengers on the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I do think it will be better, because the biggest problem I have with Batman vs. Superman, stepping back from it, is that the characters kept acting out of character.
Yeah. You think so that
Both
Joss
Batman
Whedon
and
will be able to get the characters,
yes,
give them at least character moments where they'll be recognizable as those characters.
Yeah, and I think he will be good at, like, just little things like line replacement.
Sure, yeah.
Like, you know, like Joss Whedon would take out that their mothers are named Martha. Like, yeah. And you could do that in dialogue. So instead of saying save Martha, he could say something like innocent people.
Yeah.
And that's sure. more in character. And that's a huge plot point that can be fixed without a ton of reshoots. And I feel like Joss has an eye and an ear, and he knows these characters as well as he knows the Marvel characters.
Yeah,
it's not like he was just, you know, he wrote X-Men perfectly and then made Avengers.
Marvel fan. You know what I mean? As much as you read, right. I'm a Marvel guy or whatever, it's like, yeah, but I've also been reading DC comics for fucking 20 years. So it's like, it's not just one or the other. I think it's like people read both. But his daughter committed suicide. That was like months ago.
It was 2 months ago, and he said in a press release, I thought
throwing himself into the work.
I thought I could work through it, and that would be cathartic. But it's just not happening.
So my question, I guess, is then if he's been working on this for 2 months, and he's been in this like messed up headspace. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just like my concern is just like how much, not like damage has been done in 2 months, but you know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be a dickhead to this him and his family.
No, but did it go more off the rails while he wasn't focused? That's right. What you're saying.
And remember like we always talk about Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and George Lucas and Spielberg, weren't they both going through like horrific divorces at the time?
Yeah, and that movie's weird.
And that's dark. I guess what I'm saying is like you can't.
Actually, Spielberg was on the other side because Kate Capshaw.
Oh, that's right.
He meets Kate Capshaw in Temple of Doom.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're still together.
But Lucas that's like was the heart ripping out of the thing.
Yeah, he literally has a character rip a beating heart out of another character's chest right. and shows it to him.
I don't know where that comes from. Sometimes you know things just flow in the subconscious. Right. Yeah. Maybe it was a serial in the 30s.
It's very clear where that came from.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is this, like, you know, the Zack Snyder superhero movies are already very, very dark movies. And like I said, I'm not trying to be a wise guy and pick fun at the guy, but I'm saying he's going through a very dark period in his life. How much darker then is his product going to be?
But a movie's not done until it's done. Like I said, there's so many little things you can do that don't cost a lot of money. You hear about these movies that go through extensive reshoots, and sometimes it does make them better.
Yeah, because didn't Rogue One go through like a silly amount of reshoots?
Yeah, well, Rogue One was good. I mean, the third act.
Depends on who you ask.
The third act is a little like a video game, but yeah. Like, I've heard that Forest Whitaker was supposed to have a major role in it, and his part got cut short in rewrites. And,
yeah. Yeah, he did seem to have like, why are you here?
Yeah.
You know, kind of vibe to him.
Anyone remember the weird part with the squid monster that never came up again or had any impact on the plot?
No.
Yeah, it's, no, yeah, exactly. That's my point, I guess.
I'm thinking of the Raptors in Force Awakens.
Yeah, that's exactly. What I was thinking of. Like, wasn't that in the Force Awakens?
Because that's my
squid monster.
Because I wasn't a big fan of Rogue One, but like that's
my
main point.
Tell us about the squid monster. I'm
curious. There's a point where because the pilot guy goes to Forrest Whitaker's character and he tells him that there's a squid monster.
Oh, the one that reads your mind.
That's gonna erase his mind and make him crazy, and then he just never has any impact on the plot ever.
Wow. That was such a Doctor Who kind of idea though. That I was just like, oh yeah, they threaten you with a weird alien that never comes back.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
I thought it was just a threat.
I don't
like,
even remember that happening.
Yeah, no, it's totally bizarre.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. But the first Men in Black, the entire plot was changed after the shooting was done.
Oh really?
Yeah, because the two alien races were supposed to have a war. It was supposed to be Vincent D'Onofrio was supposed to be one of the alien races that was at war with the alien that was driving the guy's face.
Yeah,
this is the first
Men in Black. And Barry Sonnenfeld says in the commentary, he was like, oh yeah, it got really complicated and really confusing. So we rewrote two scenes. They rewrote the scene of them in the diner when D'Onofrio kills them.
I thought you were like them in the diner. I was like pie.
No, that's three. which I've been quoting. I've been quoting to you since Josh Brolin was announced as Cable.
I don't even think I've seen Men in Black 2 or 3, actually.
Men in Black 2 is awful. 3 is pretty solid.
Yeah. Is that the go back in time one?
Yeah, that's the one where Josh Brolin plays young Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, okay, yeah. I know of it.
It's a fun movie.
Flips the Will Smith is the professional and then... Yeah. Tommy Lee Jones is the rookie.
That's kind of
And
neat.
It's also Josh Brolin doing a really good Tommy Lee Jones for about an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Oh, and Will Smith's like back in like the 1950s and like has a problem with like...
Racists.
Yeah, yeah. Racists like
it's
are
funny.
Everywhere.
And Jermaine Clement plays like the evil alien.
Yeah. And that's a pretty good movie. I should watch that again.
I enjoyed it. But the original Men in Black, it was supposed to be like when the two of them sit down in that diner with the cat and then Vincent D'Onofrio's killed the waiter, that scene. it was supposed to be, that was supposed to be like the negotiation of peace. And then he's an assassin that the other guy sends in. And they were like, none of this works. So they rewrote all of the dialogue. That dialogue was in captions because they were speaking in an alien language. And then the other scene where they go to the farmhouse where Vincent D'Onofrio was, where Siobhan Fallon is, and they neuralize her like several times.
Yeah.
When they're
sugar wire.
When they're outside, when they're outside looking at the spaceship that's crashed into the ground, mm-hmm. and Tommy Lee Jones is explaining what the plot is, all of those shots are from behind his head and reaction shots of Will Smith because they completely rewrote all that. And Men in Black 1, I think, is one of the best scripts I've ever seen. Like, I tend to love sci-fi and horror comedies, number one.
Yeah.
But that, I think that story is so tight that that's a movie that was probably going to be pretty good. And they made it great after all the shooting was done. And Joss has the ability to do that now.
Right.
So it's possible he can just... I mean, the set pieces are going to be what they are. Whatever the big action sequences are going to
be.
Yeah,
all the design work is done. The
Cyborg is
going to
look like a shard of broken glass.
Right.
We know this. Cyborg looks like the way Eric Larson drew Sandman in The Return of the Sinister Six. Did you ever read that story?
I flipped through the Epic Collection, came out.
I liked it. The sequel he did in Spider-Man, after McFarlane left Spider-Man, Larson left later to do Savage Dragon, but... there was a scene where Sandman wouldn't join the Sinister Six. So Dr. Octopus is like, all right, and turns him into glass. And he's a glass statue for like 3 issues. And then they're leaving their hideout. And they go, what do you want to do about Sandman? And he goes, oh, yeah. And he picks up the gun and throws it at him and shatters Sandman.
Yeah.
And then at the end, this is not really a spoiler. It's just a goofy story. At the end, like the Fantastic Four are in it. And there's like a bunch of people are in it. There's like this huge fight going on. They're fighting a big Kirby monster. And Sandman walks in, and he's a living creature of shards of broken glass.
Yeah.
And then he shoots all the broken glass into Dr. Octopus. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But he looks like Cyborg does in this movie.
Oh, no.
That's how bad he looks.
Hey, yeah.
Cyborg and Flash just look like they're broken.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, somebody said that Cyborg looks like a Transformer, and why they keep putting the Flash in armor and things blows my mind. It's
they
like,
don't on a TV show.
It looks okay. I mean, the TV show looks kind of like leather-ish. It's like, it's okay.
Yeah, but it's I get the... At least it's not armor. It's like he's a running guy. It's like when they put Superman in armor.
No,
it's like
armor makes no goddamn sense.
His skin is stronger than any armor we could forge.
He can duck whatever's coming.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Hey, Steven, real quick. Yeah. Just we don't have to dwell on this, but because we're mentioning Eric Larson, anyone at the store still reading Savage Dragon or?
No, I have no.
Do you order it at all?
Nope, I don't even order it at all. But
not even one for the
still
shelf
is solicited every month.
Oh, really?
I admire that he's still doing. He's like the Charles Schultz. He's like the Charles Schultz of comics. He doesn't care if anybody's reading it. He's just going to do it till the day he dies.
Yeah. Just figured I'd bring it up.
Every time I look at it, I kind of admire it.
What I'm saying. I don't like Eric Larson's art style, but I like a guy that's committed to his thing. You know what I mean? Like that's his thing. That's his book. You know, he's going to do it regardless of how many people are reading it.
Right. And there was a period in the early 2000s where it had stopped making money, so he was taking on Marvel.
There's no way
he's
making money on that book.
No, and he was doing other work. Like, he was doing Defenders for a little bit, and he did a couple of Spider-Mans, and he orchestrated that whole Fantastic Four, World's Greatest Comic Magazine, where everyone drew like Kirby.
That was all his idea.
That's a really great book. So, Savage Dragon is obviously his passion project.
Yeah.
Unlike McFarlane, who, you know, just handed it off to other guys within 2 years and is really only publishing it to keep the trademark alive.
He's a dumpster person.
Yeah. I'm looking forward. I'm looking more forward to Justice League than I was last week.
Yeah, I'm on the other side of it. I really think it's going to be... I don't know if it'll be worse, but I think there's no way this movie's going to be good.
Yeah,
and not to disrespect Whedon or the other guy. I'm just saying, I just think two different guys coming in doing two different takes on a movie. Obviously, Joss Whedon's going to try to just finish the job, but I think there's just no way this movie's going to look like a concise project. I think it's just going to be all over the place.
Yeah, that's my thing. I think I would, even if I like, you know, even though I do like Joss Whedon over Zack Snyder, I think I'd rather just see like one person's vision. Like, even if it might be worse, just I'd rather see something coherent than something that's like patchwork where like some of this works,
right,
some of it doesn't.
That's patchwork is a good example,
I
think.
I trust the ability of Joss Whedon to not make it look like patchwork. I think Joss Whedon is going to do a spackle job and a repaint where you think the wall was never broken.
Yeah.
However, thinking about it, he's not perfect. Right. Yeah. Age of Ultron, it's not that great.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of that is him or idiots on the producing
and how
end.
Much of this will be him and how much will be Zack Snyder and how much will be the producers on the Warner Brothers side.
Right.
I mean, you know, the last three movies they've given us haven't been great.
The rumor has it that Wonder Woman is awesome.
But the rumor has it last month that Wonder Woman was a train wreck.
Yeah, and you know what's other? Is they're saying it's the best live-action DC animated movie since the Dark Knight movies ended. And it's like, so compared to Superman versus Batman, Superman, or Man of Steel, Green Lantern, and Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
That's what you're comparing it
to. You don't even have to count Green Lantern because it came out before Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, that's right. So it would be like just Suicide Squad and the two Superman
just this
movies.
Cycle.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah.
I hope it's good. It looks great. I think
that's I'm crossing my fingers, yeah.
I'm going to go. I have a really busy weekend next weekend, so I don't know when I'm going to go, but I'm going to go.
Thursday, 7 o'clock.
Oh, it opens on Thursday?
Hollywood Boulevard.
All right. I'll go Thursday.
Did you guys hear about this, like, controversy about Wonder Woman? Were they, like, some
Alamo
theater?
The Alamo Draft House, which is this big revival.
It's a chain.
Yeah, it's like a big...
One big one in Austin, Texas, and it was very near where Harry Knowles was. Yeah, it's near that, but it's also near... But Alamo's in San Antonio. It's also near where Harry Knowles is from Ain't It Cool News. So Ain't It Cool News made it a big deal because every movie they reviewed, they would see there.
Yeah.
And it was one of those first movie theaters that would give you beer. And I remember reading Ain't
That was like their thing.
Yeah, I remember reading Ain't It Cool News around the time that like Lord of the Rings was being made and they had a lot of reports and they would talk about the Alamo Draft House. I was like, wow, imagine a movie theater where you could get a beer. Now we have one.
Right, yeah, they're everywhere. Used to have a thing theaters do now.
Yeah, and you used to have a store next door to a good
one.
Yeah,
I used to. but so that controversy blew up because guys are
dumb. But I haven't actually heard what
okay, the controversy. So the controversy is this. This theater in the Alamo decided they're going to do a women's only screening of Wonder Woman, meaning only women are allowed to the theater. The projectionists are female. The people running the cash registers are female. The two people selling the tickets, it's like female only, 100% theater, which is like for Wonder Woman a big deal and all this stuff.
X chromosome night.
This should have just been a nice little story of like, oh, look at women coming together for a Wonder Woman movie. And that should have been the end of it. But then I guess a bunch of bros got butthurt about it and then decided to like flip out and leave all these hateful comments and stuff. And there was all this like outrage about it. So the response then was the Alamo Theater, and this was a completely sold out event. It was one showing, it completely sold out.
So it wasn't even like a whole day, it was just one showing.
Just one showing.
It was like an event.
Okay. Yeah, just
and it was a preview, it already happened.
Okay. Right.
So like the movie comes out on Thursday.
And I think this would have been like a Friday maybe. Maybe even if it was an opening day, it was still one showing at one theater.
Yeah, it's one advanced screening.
Right. So then they responded by adding like four or five or six other showings that were female only, and those started selling out like subsequently because of all these like crybaby boys, you know, whining about inequality, which is
for a movie that
hilarious
they,
to me.
The movie that they said they didn't want to see. Somebody posted, it was either Kumail Nanjiani or like or Dan Slott on Twitter was like, how much you want to bet all the guys that were complaining they couldn't get into Wonder Woman were the same guys complaining that they were female Ghostbusters.
I think Elliot posted that.
I think
I saw it on Elliot.
Yeah, Elliot. Elliot.
I don't know if he retweeted somebody or if that was him who wrote it.
We'll ask him.
We'll ask him.
Whoever it is deserves credit for
it. Yeah, that's
it
a great line.
Yeah, there's actually, not to talk about, you know, talk about the Ghostbusters thing too much, but because sort of after all the blow up and stuff, there was actually like these guys on YouTube, they did an interesting sort of breakdown of, how like the people who were hating Ghostbusters and the like because of like the women and the people who were just like, oh, I don't think this movie looks that good. It was like a vocal minority versus like a large majority, and how essentially Sony was like kind of spinning like just, it was kind of interesting like how they're kind of like hate like kind of just like breeding more like hatred and like trying to. It was kind of interesting.
I found it interesting when I finally saw the movie that I was like, oh, everyone is right. It was like because it was just okay.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I can see why people didn't want this movie to be made, and I can see why people wanted this movie to be made, because it was a solid C. It's not even the funniest Melissa McCarthy movie.
Yeah.
It's not even the funniest Ghostbusters.
It's not even the funniest movie with both Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy.
Did you rank it second or third?
Second. Two is garbage.
Oh, yeah.
Vigo? Get out of here with Vigo. Pink slime and the dancing toaster. I remember sitting in
like the buzzing of flies to him.
Okay, Peter McMahon is funny in it.
He's great in this.
The Upper West
Where
Side.
Where are you from? The Upper West Side. It's a great line.
I will say.
He ended up on Ally McBeal.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember?
Because every time they had a commercial for Ally McBeal,
Robert
Downey
Jr. was on that show?
Yeah.
And like his career was over?
That's when he was doing really bad.
Yeah, he wasn't doing so great then.
Well, honestly, he wasn't doing great till Iron Man because he was making little indie movies. He was like Build Fifth in Zodiac.
Yeah.
And then he was making movies like Scanner Darkly. Which he's great in, but it's totally a weird movie that not a lot of people are ever going to watch.
I've never even heard of that, yeah.
Oh, it's a Philip K. Dick novel that is...
It's animated.
Yeah, it's animated, but it's painted over. So all the actors are in it.
Oh, that's interesting.
In, like, very simple sets. It was... why am I blanking on the director? I think it's the same director that did Boyhood.
Oh, Richard Linklater.
Yeah, Richard Linklater did it, and he did a film called Waking Life, which is about... people discussing dreams, and then as they would discuss it, the animation would turn into the dream.
Yeah, I'll have to put that on my summer list then.
So yeah, it's really interesting because it's Keanu Reeves stars in it, and you put,
I like Keanu Reeves.
You put Keanu Reeves in a good movie, you're going to get a good Keanu Reeves movie.
Yeah, he's like, him and Johnny Depp, they're like two sides of the opposite coin. Keanu Reeves, I think, gets billed as a bad actor, but he's actually a good actor, he's just in bad movies a lot. Johnny Depp also gets billed as a good actor, but he's actually a bad actor in a lot of, you know what I mean, in some good movies.
Yeah. Though somebody said years ago, I don't know if Johnny Depp is the greatest bad actor or the worst good actor in history. although after Mordecai, it seems like. Yeah. And they say Pirates of the Caribbean 5 is horrible.
Well, it's like, why they keep making Pirates
because
of the Caribbean
Because he has an expensive divorce.
Mind.
That's why.
I think
why do they keep making Transformers? Because there's enough people that see the brand name and just show up.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Stu McLean.
Oh my God, seriously. He can't wait. He's like, you gotta watch this trailer.
No.
I'm like, look, the trailer looks great. The footage looks great.
It's gonna be terrible.
They're filmed right, but it's gonna
be... it's number 5. They're not gonna get it right now.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
it's like the longer something goes on doesn't necessarily mean the better it gets.
Well, you and I saw Alien Covenant together last week, which we covered on the show, and they showed the trailer for Transformers, and I thought we were gonna get kicked out of the theater. Because I leaned over and whispered to you, does Stu like these movies? And you went, oh, God, he thinks they're fucking great. And the whole theater just kind of turned. I'm like, oh, shit, we're the yelling assholes of the movie theater.
It's because you got me a beer.
You were so incensed.
Yeah. I think the best tweet I've seen about the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie, I forget who it was, but it was something where the person just said, I haven't seen the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie, but I feel like I have.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I feel like I could take like the last three Pirates of the Caribbean and edit the fifth film together out of footage. You know?
The original three pirates were like The Matrix, where the first one
is great.
So much better than you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And then the second one's pretty bad, but it has like two action sequences that almost save the entire movie. And then three is incomprehensible.
Yeah.
The difference between The Matrix and the Pirates of the Caribbean was they kept making Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
Well, because they still make money, I think.
I can't remember a single thing that happened in 4 other than Ian McShane is in it and Penelope Cruz.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know the difference between 3 and 4. Like, I couldn't tell you a single
thing. Ian McShane is in 4. That's all I can tell. 3 is like still Peter Nye as a tentacle face.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like he's still in that. And
then it's like those effects were awesome too. Like the tentacle face guy looked great. The skeletons look great in the first one.
Yeah. That first one's still really, really good.
Yeah. I still like it. And that's why, like I said, it's like I really like Johnny Depp in that. He did a great job, but he's just been like redoing the same thing since then.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know. It's just like it's
and
very
all, but,
strange.
And there's just been so many reports because of his divorce about like what a horrible person he is.
Yeah,
that it's just like it's getting to the allegations aren't as bad as Bill Cosby, but it's getting to the point where when you look at Johnny Depp, you just don't like him anymore.
Oh, I see. I don't follow any of that stuff, so I have no
I don't
idea.
Either. But there's enough headlines to just go.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a dick now.
Yeah, and, didn't he have that thing where like he brought like a exotic animal to like Australia
to shoot this movie?
Was that what it was?
Yeah, and then he caused a stink because they didn't want to let that animal in.
Right.
And he made like $50 million for this movie.
Fuck him.
Yeah, but he's got to give most of that to his ex-wife.
Yeah.
That's true.
Good for her.
But yeah.
Get that money, honey.
I guess going back to Wonder Woman for a bit.
Yeah.
Like my thing with Wonder Woman is like, I think I'll wait to see it because I definitely want to like support, you know, like a female led action movie. Like that's great. You know, I think, you know, you need more of that in Hollywood and just in general, you know, more representation. That's great. But like at the same time though, it's like, I don't like, even if the reports might be good, it's like, I don't know if I want to give my money to another DC movie and then just be like, well, oh, it's terrible.
The problem I have with people saying how great it is, and the trailer looks great, but the trailer for Suicide Squad looked great. Yeah. And what really bothers me was a story I read last year in, I think it was in Ain't It Cool News, but it was on one of like the big movie sites about how Warner Brothers executives went crazy for Batman vs. Superman and thought it was going to be incredible, and they signed Ben Affleck up to his own Batman movie immediately, and they thought it was going to be the biggest thing ever. And then, of course, we saw it, and it is what it is. It exists out there. Go see it, and you tell me what you think.
Or maybe
but they're saying kind of the same thing about Wonder Woman that they were saying about Batman vs. Superman last year. A lot of it could be damage control, where when Suicide Squad came out, they were like, okay, yeah, Batman vs. Superman was bad, but this is the good one. And if I could trash Kevin Smith one more time.
Please do.
Go for it.
Kevin Smith has been such a Warner Brothers shill that I remember there was a special of him and Jeff Johns talking about Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, I remember this.
And he's just like shaking his head gleefully. He's like, yeah, man, this looks like it's going to be the greatest thing ever. Oh, can't wait to see Batman. Batman and Batmobile. Superman is going to be fine. This is going to be the best movie ever. And then like about a month after it came out, he was on Batman. He's like, yeah, man, I think they missed the mark on this movie. And I'm like, yeah, but that tells me that Warner Brothers has a blanket window of good reviews.
Yeah.
Of like, the movie's coming out, say it's good. And people like Kevin Smith or executives at Warner Brothers are going to run around going, it's great. Because when Suicide Squad came out, they were like, yeah, Batman vs. Superman was bad. This one's really great. And then we argued after that movie. I'm like, well, it's better than Batman vs. Superman.
Right.
I don't even know if that's true even. Because it's like, I guess you can search this up after, but there's a YouTube channel called Folding Ideas, and it's this guy who does like editing for stuff, and he does an editing breakdown of Suicide Squad and basically points out all this stuff where it's like, this movie is like objectively like one of the worst movies ever, just in terms of like it being an editing nightmare in terms of like how stuff is.
Oh wow.
It's fascinating.
Amazon right now has an editor's cut of Spider-Man 3.
Isn't every movie an editor's cut?
No, as opposed to a director's cut or a studio cut. So
Spider-Man 3, like with Venom and Sandman?
Yeah. So I kind of want to see, it was kind of like Star Wars Episode 1, there was that fan edit going around that like cut Jar Jar out of the movie.
Yeah.
And people were like, this movie's pretty good.
Right, it's not terrible.
I kind of want to see that, but.
Are we ever going to get to Age of Apocalypse or no?
We're at about, we got about like 10 minutes. We might have you back.
There you go.
This is like old Letterman. We're bumping the topic.
Gets bumped for next week.
Well, you know what? Let's get into it now, because we don't know what these movies are going to be. Next week, we'll talk about Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's true. Wonder Woman will be a big show.
So we'll know whether it's good or it's bad. But one of the things about these, what we call the Marvel Cinematic Universe now, or nobody's really labeled the DC movies because nobody likes them enough, is that they are alternate realities. They become this universe in and of themselves that's separate from the comic books.
Yeah.
And whereas we used to complain that that movies weren't comic accurate or they weren't canon, now we've come to a point where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, Avengers is going to have all of them fighting Loki and Skrulls because that's who was around in the Silver Age, but the plot's not going to be that.
Right.
And Dark Knight Rises is going to be part of No Man's Land and part of Nightfall, but it's not going to adapt that at all. We've accepted that the characters are going to look different, they're going to have different costumes, their origins are going to be streamlined, and the plots aren't going to completely relate. But in comics, we have always had that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had that going back to the Golden Age of the in the 70s and 80s Marvel called What If, and then in the 90s DC called Elseworlds, these alternate realities within comic universes where the rules don't apply, this is a bubble. The Ultimate Universe was an entire comics line that was a What If.
Yeah, John, you hate these stories.
I hate all of them.
I love them.
I can go either way, I think.
Yeah, it depends. I wouldn't say like they're blanketly good.
Oh, yeah. No way.
Age of Apocalypse looks like a pile of garbage.
I wouldn't say blanketly is a word.
Yeah, well, the President of the United States makes up words. John, I can make up words,
and
too.
And no one respects him. He's shoving NATO guys around to try to get some respect.
But what I really like is the idea of, hey, look, these characters have been around for 75 years. This is a line of comics where we can take all the existing continuity, just throw it out the window and redo the concept. And I think like the best Elseworlds and the best What Ifs are the ones that slightly change something. If it's a massive change and it's too far removed, it's like you might as well create up your own thing.
It's like Alan Davis's The Nail.
Right. That's a great example.
Yeah, I just read. Yeah.
Like The Nail and Superman Red Son are like the easiest two to think about, right? So in The Nail, the premise is the Kents get a flat tire because the nails get stuck in their car. So they aren't driving to town on the day that Superman crashes in the field. So they never pick up Superman. So it's a world without Superman just because of a single nail, right? And then it has a nice poem about, like, because of the want of a nail and the night.
It's an old poem.
The old poem. All right. So then in Red Sun, it's the same thing.
I was going to say for The Nail, too.
Was the second nail?
No, I was just going to say, just in general, because of The Nail, it's pretty relevant because then it turns Green Arrow and Lex Luthor into crazy, like, Donald Trump anti-immigrant people.
Yeah.
Which is good because it's just the panel of Green Arrow just screaming about how they don't like aliens.
Right.
And the aliens got to get out.
It's actually cool because
it's pretty relevant.
it's basically, they just show the side effects of what a world without Superman looks like. So when the Justice League goes to fight Amazo,
Green Arrow gets crippled.
Because
and then Hawkman
he has,
gets killed.
Yeah, no business
and
fighting
what I like
Amazo.
About that movie. What I like about that story is that it's a slow build where the beginning of The Nail, everything's the same.
Yeah.
It's like an early 80s DC in terms of look. Oh, yeah. And then it's just the plot slowly like Batman strangles the Joker at one point.
Right. And then it's wonderful. Yeah. It's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Things start slowly sliding off. There really needs to be an absolute edition of that. Sequel is the right page count.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's,
I don't know why we haven't gotten it
yet. And it's got a great twist ending too. Like I didn't see that coming. Like,
yeah. We won't.
We won't spoil.
Yeah. No, but I would say because I was reading it and I definitely thought it was going one way, but that was an excellent like twist.
That's one of the best things that I think Alan Davis has done.
Yeah.
And Alan Davis is
what else has he done? Because I'm not too familiar with his work.
He's done a lot. He did a really beautiful run on Detective Comics in the late 80s. He kicked off Batman and the Outsiders. He did Excalibur for a long time. Okay. He wrote both X-Men in the late 90s. He's a guy that bounces around a lot.
He does a lot of bounce around. He'll do at least once a year, whenever there's a five Wednesday month, Alan Davis will do a five-issue series, and it will come out weekly during that month. So he's doing Guardians one now. He did a Doctor Strange crossover a couple years ago.
He did a couple of annuals that crossed over.
Yeah, they give him the annuals, it seems, every year, and the annuals will jump between books. He did a Captain Britain run with Alan Moore in the 80s. That was pretty awesome.
Well, that's where he made his name. He did Captain Britain in England with Alan Moore.
Yeah.
And we didn't see those in here until they were reprinted, but when the editors saw them, they... DC immediately hired both of them.
Yeah.
Put
them in different
books.
I will read him on anything he wants to do. But what I was saying is...
I'll show you some of his late 90s X-Men. Yeah. You'll change your mind.
Yeah, he could get me to read late 90s X-Men. He's that good.
I got what you would call a garbage trade.
Yeah, it is.
I'm sorry to cut you off from Red Sun.
Red Sun, and that concept's very similar where the rocket carrying Superman lands on Earth 8 hours later. And
so
because of the
Russia.
Planet rotation, right, it lands in the heartland
in
of Russia instead of America. So he grows up as a Soviet champion instead of American champion. And that changes the entire history of the world. So,
my favorite was, did you ever read, called Superman, was it Secret Identity?
Oh, yeah, the Kurt Busiek one.
No, there was a Jam DeMatteis story where the rocket lands in Gotham and the Waynes find it.
Oh, yeah,
oh, no, you're talking about
Speeding Bullets.
Speeding Bullets,
thank you. And then when the parents die, he becomes Batman.
Right.
But he's Batman with all the superpowers.
Right. And it's stuff like that that's, like I said, it's a cool else. They have these takes on these different characters that slightly just twist it.
Yeah, and Red Sun is my favorite Superman story. Like, I don't think it's the best, but it's like...
I think it's...
I'm not that interested in Superman as a character, and I think it's just, like, it's a cool twist on it where it's, like, he's still fundamentally Superman because he still, like, wants to do the right thing.
Right.
But it's like, you know, how does it look? And just the way they tie it in with all this stuff, like, this is not really a spoiler, but, like, the Green Lantern's rocket is, like, tied in with, like, the Roswell landing is, like, Avenger's, like, spaceship.
Yeah,
and,
they
like,
set it in, like, very into, like, history.
Yeah, and then,
too.
Like
the
a
new
frontier
kind of
thing. Yeah,
right.
And, like, the Amazons are, like, part of, like, the Eastern Bloc, and it's just, like, all this kind of neat stuff.
Yeah, yeah, if you're a history buff, that's a good book.
It's awesome.
But, like, Kingdom Come's probably the biggest Elseworlds DC's ever done.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Or Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah,
it's technically an alternate future for Batman.
Right.
But the biggest Marvel, which you just finished, would have to be the Age of Apocalypse for X-Men.
I finished it back in January.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that's an that's like a what if or whatever you want to call it. That you typically the what ifs are like here's a one shot or maybe a miniseries,
which is
this
why
was
them.
An event for
yeah,
years.
Yeah, those like those right. I don't really like. I can understand you not liking just because it's like. Yeah, it's like you don't. I think it's those Elseworld stories are best when you get to see like the full scope of you know what's
right.
going
well,
on.
I usually hate them because it's just it does. It feels like it doesn't count.
Sure,
is that like at the end of it they hit a reset button? Either they kill everybody, which was right. like the ending of almost every what if story.
Right,
they're like, hey, what if Superman had a hangnail? Oh, everyone's dead.
Right,
that's what happens. Yeah. But Age of Apocalypse was, it was basically the biggest what-if story they ever did.
Yeah.
And I remember I was working in a comic store, and the way it started was Marvel sent out a press release that was just a sheet of paper, because this is in 95, so they weren't really using the internet for promotion. But we just got an envelope from Marvel that said, hey, by the way, all the X-Men books are canceled.
Mm.
So they said, when you see previews next week, there's no X-Men books, but here's the books you should order
oh.
because the creative teams are going to be doing this these books. And then it was a bulleted list of like Amazing X-Men and Generation Next and Weapon X. And they didn't say the premise and they didn't say how long it was going to last.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh, and by the way, the last issue of X-Men is going to be this one shot.
Oh.
And I remember the owner of the store was like, have you heard this thing? And we had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And then in the X-Men books building up, they didn't even say what the plot was. They were like, the story next month is Legion Quest, and it crosses over from Uncanny to X-Men, and something's going to happen. And they blocked out Legion.
Yeah.
Because the premise is that Legion goes back in time to kill Magneto, and he misses and kills Professor X.
Yeah. Oh, and so then he basically doomed
that's
the
what
entire
this,
universe.
This
yeah.
story is a world without Professor X.
Right.
Yeah, but the other thing that happens is the battle is so big that it gets the notice of Apocalypse.
And then he decides to invade Earth. Like, or come
yeah,
to Earth
Apocalypse was like, you know, I was going to wait about 30 years to take over for mutants, but I think I need to do it now because
yeah,
because
that was
totally
my next
active.
Question was you, we wouldn't I don't know if we started this before we started recording, but you guys had said that the Age of Apocalypse, he takes over before the Fantastic Four,
right? Yeah,
yes.
So
face,
yeah,
which would be in like
62. Yeah, so there's no superheroes to fight back.
Yeah, because
so he's
like,
basically just
yeah.
he just swarms over the Earth, and all the mutants either join
yeah.
up,
yeah,
because even mutants like Cyclops and Havoc join up with Apocalypse.
Yeah, because they're raised by Mr. Sinister. Yeah, so then
yeah,
they're
right.
part of Apocalypse's
and Mr. Sinister
crew.
Is like his second in command. And
Dark Beast
becomes like the key scientist. So a lot of them are on his side because the X-Men were never formed. And then
right.
Magneto takes whoever's left and in the memory of Charles calls them the X-Men. But they don't have the time. They don't have the patience.
The resources
to properly train them the way Professor X did with like the five originals.
Right.
And so he just kind of throws them all together and they're just this resistance force, which is just being beaten down.
Well, because it's and then at the point where the actual Age of Apocalypse picks up, Apocalypse has only invaded like North America. So then the X-Men are kind of just stationed there. They're trying to get everyone out, and it's still interesting because like it's like all the human resistance is in Europe, but then like they still hate the mutants,
right?
Even though they're trying to help, and then
So there's this ticking. There's this ticking clock through the whole book. Is that they find out early in the story that. And we'll probably give my spoilers to this, but this book is 20 years old, and honestly, the plot
it's
is
so long.
The plot is not why you read it.
Right.
That the Europe is going to launch a nuclear strike against North America.
And
they're like, that's it. Apocalypse is right about to invade Europe, and Europe is about
to reverse
nuke America.
Basically.
And so they hire Wolverine, and Wolverine and Jean Grey are together.
And then they're kind of like...
And
then
they hire
kind of
them
agents,
to try to stop, to get word out to the humans that... that they're going to fight back and don't nuke North America. And that's his story. And each one of the X-Men books kept the character that was in that book. Sometimes if they were teams, they shifted around.
Sure.
Like Colossus and Kitty were the leaders of Generation X in that.
Yeah.
And that's where they moved over to. And Excalibur was only about Nightcrawler. It was a solo book about Nightcrawler.
Excalibur is probably the weakest book in there.
Interesting because it's Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
Have you guys... I'm not switching gears. I'm just trying to read the room. Did you guys...
X-Force became Gambit's book too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you guys read Earth X?
I was texting you about this earlier in the week. I was trying to read it, and then I was reading it, and I'm like, I don't appreciate this enough.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give it
Marvel Universe continuity.
Because I mean, I don't have the money to buy all these old omnibuses and stuff. But it's like when I get to reading some old stuff, and you know, like especially just like Machine Man stuff, I'll appreciate this a lot more.
Right.
So I'm gonna save like the reveals for myself.
Because that was my question is like Age of Apocalypse. Everything you guys are saying, I'm like, this sounds like a great story. This is
but
something
90s
I want to read. But 90s
and it's
art.
It's,
and 90s
some of it's not that
artists.
No, some of it's totally. Not that bad.
They do have
It is that period where the Jim Lee style is fading and the anime style is
and going. That Joe Madre art I fucking Joe Madreira,
I think some Humberto Ramos is in there. Chris Bacalo, when he's coming out of Vertigo, is in it.
Yeah.
So it is very anime influenced, but I kind of like that style of art. I don't think it's the best superhero art.
The main X-Men, the main X-Men book, I think, like, it doesn't look poor proportioned because they style it, like, make it stylized enough to where it's, like, it's good. Like, that's the only, but I'd say some of it is pretty.
Yeah, the Kuberts are still around on it.
Yeah.
I don't understand why you don't like them.
They don't have the talent of their father.
I don't know. I Andy got really, really good when he did Grant's Batman.
Yeah.
I loved his art on that.
I feel like you also hate Grant Morrison. My face.
You also hate Grant Morrison, so that's just like a double whammy.
I hate Grant Morrison. I just think Grant Morrison is highly overrated. And,
I'll give you that, but that doesn't mean he's not good.
Well, he's got good stories. Like I said, New X-Men I like, and All-Star Superman I like. And
I loved his Batman run. I loved all of it.
His Doom Patrol is excellent.
Yeah, that's what I like, is Batman referencing all this 1950s nonsense.
Yeah, because it was...
Put Batman in a purple and red in costume and give him a bat to carry out, because he's the Batman.
And make it work.
That's dumb.
I love it. All right,
but here's what
run.
I'm saying, is the concept of Age of Apocalypse, I'm 100% sold on. I love shit like this. But then I look at the two omnibuses. There are two omnibuses for this.
Or yeah, there's a main omnibus.
You can buy it as three trades, and you can still read it. And
No. It has nothing to do with the cost.
You're talking
about
page count.
Volume.
Oh, sure.
It's insanity. It's just too much. And that's why I brought up Earth X, because Earth X and then Paradise X and Universe X is this huge, ridiculous thing. But you could just read Earth X, and that's 12 issues. And I feel like they need to redo Age of Apocalypse, just do 12 issues, boil it down to what works, and just make that, and have a consecutive creative team. This 40 different artists working on a crossover of 3 years.
There's consecutive creative teams on like the specific titles.
Yeah, though. You could have read just the one monthly. Because
there was a monthly Age of Apocalypse book.
No, it was
Amazing X, or like it's Amazing X-Men or something.
You
could have
stuck with the one book. If you were only reading Wolverine, say there's nobody who did that. But if you were only reading Wolverine and not X-Men, and then you went into Age of Apocalypse, you could just read those Weapon X issues because you're only following Wolverine. So the way the books were laid out, it wasn't a 25-part story.
Yeah, it's multiple stories.
Each title followed one character through the Age of Apocalypse.
No, but
they all start in the one shot, then they go their separate paths,
and then they all converge
in the final one shot.
And I get that, but my thing would be, so say I just followed Wolverine, wouldn't I be like, what is going on in all these other books?
No,
wouldn't I want to know what's going on in the other books?
I mean, I get it helps, but it's like with the example of Weapon X, it's like all you need to know is okay. He's got something going on with Mr. Sinister. He's trying to help out humans. You know, you just get the sense that the world is just really
shitty. The books do not cross over into each other because they plan it out pretty well, actually.
Now that
we're talking about it, they figured out what characters were in what book and what story they had, because it ran 4 months. So basically it was a collection of like 12 4-issue limited series all set in the same place.
Yeah.
So like I said, if you're reading Weapon X, you're following Wolverine and Jean Grey, you don't really have to care about what Gambit's doing or what Magneto's doing. But if you want to find out what Magneto's doing, you're reading X-Men. If you want to find out what Gambit's doing, you're reading Gambit. And in the one shot, like, Magneto brings everyone together and he's like, look, this is what we have to do. Wolverine, this is your mission. Gambit, this is your mission. Colossus, this is your mission. Nightcrawler, this is your mission. Then they all go out.
Yeah.
And then they have that mission to perform for their 4 issues. And then they all lead back into the one shot where they're like, all right, here's the results of all our missions. Let's go get Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. So technically, you could read it in 6 issues. They also did, the Companion has a bunch of stuff
I've
they
never
did
read the
later.
Companion.
Companion's all right. The best book in the Companion is X-Universe, which we were talking about before we started recording, is what happened to the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man. And because Apocalypse attacks basically before Fantastic Four number one, they're all just normal people. None of them have powers.
Yeah, and they're like leading the human resistance, right?
Yeah, like Stephen Strange is in it, but he hasn't like learned how to control magic.
Yeah.
So they're in Europe trying, they're building like the nuclear missiles to go attack.
Tony's, if I remember correctly, like Tony Stark's hooked up to some like crazy like blimp thing. It's nuts.
Well, Tony Stark has just the chest plate.
Yeah.
Because his heart got injured, but he never got to build the whole armor.
Yeah.
And Dr. Doom is good in it. And Dr. Doom's just running around with a scar on his face. So it's a good story. The reason the book is so big is just to get everything. Sure. It's like this compendium.
But I mean, I stand by that. Like, well, because the reason I primarily picked it up was because I'm a big fan of Rick Remender's Uncanny stuff, and then he references that a lot in there. So I was just trying to get context for it, I guess. But like, I think it was worth reading. But I think if that book was made like, say like 7 years later, it would be really good. Like it's still good, but it's
well,
like,
7 years later is the ultimate.
Right, that's what I mean. Like if it was made in those that like early 2000s period where Marvel was like winding down from like the big bubble burst, it would have been really, really good.
But that's the thing. I think it came out at the right time because it caps the end of 90s X-Men. It's almost like if you're into like the Fox series of that era, it's like at that point, I've been going through a lot of my X-Men because I went through all my omnibuses. I don't have any back issues. Oh. And around the time of C2E2, I started looking at the holes that were in the omnibuses because the omnibuses are pretty complete.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, there's like 2 years of Uncanny that aren't here. And there's like, oh, about 7 issues of X-Men that aren't here. So I do have... And granted, they're usually dealing with storylines that are complete to themselves. But I was like, oh, well, I don't have a full run. And then I realized, oh, this isn't an Epic collection. And this isn't a trade from 10 years ago. So it's all out there. So I've been putting it together and I've been reading that whole era of the 80s to the 90s. And what happens is they're on this peak. And they lose Jim Lee and Wills Portacio and Rob Liefeld like all at once because they all go to Image. And they panic. And they freak out, and then they do Executioner Song, which is basically to introduce all the new teams. It's like, here's the Kuberts and Capullo, and Scott Lobdell's still here, and Nessies is going to write everything. This is what the status quo is going to be. And then the show comes out, so they're still at that sales high. They don't lose any sales from Jim Lee because there's so many more kids who know who the X-Men are. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the storylines just keep getting stretched because you have two writers writing like 7 books every month.
Jesus.
And it's like, it's just starting to wobble a little bit. And like Wolverine was outside of the X-Men, then he gets pulled in. And then they start a Cable book next to X-Force. And then they start Generation Next. And then there's Unlimiteds and Annuals. Mm. And there's just so much content that the thing's starting to like fall under its own weight, so that they do Fatal Attractions, which is okay.
That's where, like, Wolverine gets his animanium ripped out?
Yeah, because Magneto's just like, fuck everybody.
Yeah.
And that's...
Why he didn't do that, like, 20 years earlier. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. As soon as you find out one of your primary enemies has metal bones, it's just like, oh, I control metal? You're a dead person now.
Why he doesn't turn Colossus into a ball is
they said that he can't affect Colossus, but then they go back and forth on that all the time. They're like, no, he's not magnetic, well, like, but shit. It is...
Well, because it's like biological metal or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Some garbage.
Bullshit.
Right, seriously.
But Fatal Attractions is interesting. And then they do Phalanx Covenant, which is bleh. So then the sales are starting to get shaky. So then they just like do a Hail Mary pass with this. And this is what keeps that book afloat.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a huge event in the mid-90s when they really need that sales boost.
And this was before Onslaught, right? So this was this did so well that they were like, okay, now make a big Magneto crossover.
And Onslaught is a mess because... Because not only was it the next big thing that was supposed to outdo Age of Apocalypse, but in the middle of it, they found out that they were selling Avengers and Fantastic Four to Image. So they were like, oh, you know what? Onslaught now needs to be about this. I was like, well, how is that going to work? Onslaught fights the entire Marvel Universe, which happens like in the middle of the book.
Yeah.
Like he launches Sentinels all over Manhattan and then all of a sudden like Hulk and Spider-Man and Captain America and Iron Man have to fight the Sentinels. And they're like, oh, Onslaught, we have to fight him. And the whole thing loses complete focus. And after that, they don't really recover until Grant Morrison comes in. So the late 90s are terrible for X-Men other than...
So this is like the last good... big X-Men story before Grant Morrison. Yeah, I
mean, this is like the ending of the 90s. This is like
take it from someone who doesn't like 90s X-Men. It's probably the one good, like the one maybe story.
Yeah, I mean the only thing I can think of in the late 90s for X-Men that works is Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness doing Deadpool.
And I don't like Deadpool, so scratched off my list.
But that is the series that cements Deadpool as an A-lister Marvel character who now has giant movies.
Yeah.
But and then you have on the Avengers and Fantastic Four fizzled pretty quickly. But on the Avengers front, Kurt Busiek comes in with George Perez.
Yeah, and those Heroes Return books were great for the Avengers.
And that basically becomes Marvel in the late 90s because Spider-Man is so crippled by the Clone Saga.
Yeah.
That Spider-Man can't get back on its feet until Straczynski comes in 2001 and then that Sam Raimi movie comes out.
Right.
So in the late 90s, Age of Apocalypse ends that era where the X-Men are the center of the Marvel Universe.
It's like a shining light in a forest of shit.
Sure.
Yeah, kind of. You know? Kind of. I was thinking about this when Chris Cornell passed away last week. I was listening to Black Hole Sun and what a masterpiece that song is. And then I was thinking about when it comes out. It's like 95, maybe 96. But I realized, oh my God, this is the end of grunge, this one song. In the way that Smells Like Teen Spirit is the beginning of grunge.
Yeah.
Like there was no grunge before it. That song exploded. And then all of a sudden there were all these bands. Like you had never heard of Pearl Jam or Soundgarden or Alice in Chains before Smells Like Teen Spirit came out. And Black Hole Sun is like Kurt Cobain's dead. And this song is like, this song's got an elegy funeral.
Is that song about Kurt Cobain being dead?
No, it's just kind of a pastiche.
Yeah.
Of just like weird images, but it's in that style that then would just kind of give way to like Oasis and honestly hip hop. Like yeah. That's kind of the end of rock, and Napster would come and eat the music industry anyway. So you could set these goalposts, and I feel like with X-Men, you could set the goalposts with X-Men number one, I would say, because that's the height of Jim Lee.
Yeah.
You know, he had been on Uncanny for a long time, but X-Men number one was like that explosive, pure Jim Lee art. Like X-Men number one is like the beginning of the X-Men 90s era, and then in the Age of Apocalypse is the end of it.
The Alpha and the Omega.
It is. And they're actually called
Alpha and Omega.
Yeah, the one shots in the Age of Apocalypse are Alpha and Omega.
Yeah.
And Age of Apocalypse was so popular that I don't know why they did this, but they kept a bunch of the characters.
Yeah.
So Dark Beast is a, they brought him back.
He's a recurring character.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just it's an interesting concept.
Dark Beast, like Bishop had his memories from the Age of Apocalypse and they were driving him crazy. But then
because he's the only one who survived.
But they've gone back to X-Men, Age of Apocalypse X-Men, four or five times.
Yeah.
Because they went back to it in Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force run. They did a mini series out of that. And then when they did Secret Wars, they had an Age of Apocalypse territory.
Right, and they also did a 10-year anniversary limited series, which is in The Companion.
Right.
In like 2006.
So it's definitely a successful one. Whether or not it's all good is obviously up for debate.
You just have to read it, because everybody's telling you it's good, and you're like, I don't know, and this has been going on for years.
Yeah.
Just push through the bad art.
That's a hard thing for me to do.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like stepping into a hot bathtub.
Yeah, sure.
You're like, I don't like this. I like this.
No, this isn't so
bad. Sure. Just don't read anything else. Just don't give yourself context.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess as reserved as I am, because I always feel like you should preserve your creative energies for furthering the character. And with alternate realities, you're kind of dealing with characters that only live for that issue or a couple of issues.
Right.
That are in that series, because no matter what you do with Spider-Man, eventually you're going to go back to Spider-Man swinging around Manhattan, and he's not going to remember any of it.
Well, but you could also make the argument, too, that if you're doing an alternate universe thing, then you're allowed to kind of, as a creative person, flex your muscles more with the character and do more interesting stuff.
Yeah, I feel like the muscles they always flex are, let's change all the costumes and then kill everybody.
Yeah, but speaking as, like, an artist, you know, a quote-unquote artist, you know, I'm not trying to, like, toot my own horn, but I'm just saying, it's like, does redesigning all the characters, that's, like, half the reason these guys probably sign up for this shit. It's like, okay, cool, here's what I'd make Cyclops look like. If I had a chance to design
long hair and one eye,
right? Exactly.
That's a pretty cool design.
Yeah,
I had an action figure of him in the 90s.
They made one,
and
yeah.
I was like, "Who? What happened to Cyclops?"
See, now you have to read this to find out what happened to Cyclops, because there's a whole story about why he has
that
one
eye.
That's
one of the neater kind of side stories in there. I did like that rivalry.
Here's a hint: it has to do with Wolverine's one hand.
Oh,
it's mildly cool.
So Wolverine has one hand in all
Cyclops
of the
Cyclops has one eye, so maybe he cut his eye out and he blasted his hand off.
Maybe.
I'd have to read it to find out.
I mean,
have to read it to find out. Age of Apocalypse is in print now.
Look,
to that point, Age of Apocalypse was out of print for a long time. They brought it back with new printings in trades. I think it's three or four.
They've
volumes.
Reprinted the Omnibus,
and now the Omnibus is back in print again. Yeah. I think it's three.
I think it's three trades and a companion trade or Omnibus.
Yeah. So, So I think as long as an alternate reality is done well. I mean, I think there's a quote in the introduction of Watchmen, and you can correct me, but Alan Moore says, this is an imaginary story, aren't they all? And in the end, none of these count, because there's no Gotham City.
Right.
There's no Professor X's School of Gifted Youngsters. But I like to see ongoing continuities, and when you tell me there's an alternate reality, you tell me this continuity is not going to be ongoing.
Yeah.
But then there are stories like Age of Apocalypse, or Dark Knight Returns, or Old Man Logan. Or the Ultimates.
Where Logan is great.
Yeah. Where the tone and some of the ideas get pulled over. There's so much Ultimate Universe in the movies.
Yeah.
So I guess I got to soften my stance because I do own a bunch of these books.
I was
going to
say, there's quite a few over here.
I mean, yeah. I mean, then again, you could argue, too, that you own a lot of... You own things that you admit are garbage trades,
and
so...
That typically...
I like to see things go bad!
Typically, too, with, real quick, the... You know, the what-ifs, a lot of those in the Elseworlds is, like... The bad guys never win in the comics. The what-ifs in the Elseworlds are some of the only stories where it's like, well, what would it look like if the bad guys did win? That's the whole premise of Age of Apocalypse, is, like, our biggest X-Men bad guy wins.
I will say this. My favorite kind of story is where they... is where they have their cake and eat it too, where they take like an alternate reality story and put it in the
main continuity.
Yeah, I would say Superior Spider-Man is that.
That's an
what if Dr. Octopus was Spider-Man? Oh, and we figured out a way that is actually happening.
Right.
And we've got a beginning, middle, and end.
Or Secret Empire. Yeah.
And a clone. Oh,
I haven't read
Secret Empire.
It's
so
a thing
far so good.
I mean, I don't
trashing it in issue one. Has it gotten better?
It's my whole thing with Secret Empire, which is essentially in Elseworlds. It won't be quick because we're wrapping up here. But the Spencer's been writing the hell out of both those Captain America books for over a year. He's been building this up for a while. This entire crossover hinges on how it ends. Do you know what I'm saying? If they don't have a good ending to how Steve is going to be back to being Captain America and the Hydra thing and the Cosmic Cube and everything, they have to. But I'm saying they have to, and they might do it, and it'll be shitty and it'll suck, right? We've seen a lot of events that have like no good resolution.
Right.
If they pull it off like they pulled off Spider-Man, the Superior Spider-Man,
then
it's going to be awesome.
Dan Slott went into that knowing how it was going to
end.
Exactly. I'm feeling because they already set up the whole thing with, what is it, like Kovic? Like
the
Cosmic Cube Girl.
Cosmic Cube Girl.
Yeah, I'll read it eventually just because I don't read monthly.
Yeah,
I'd say it's
worth reading, but it's, it's like if it doesn't end great, it'll pull the whole thing down regardless of how good the buildup is.
Oh, and speaking of trades that are on sale, this, when this comes out, your sale is still going on.
Yeah, so I guess we'll put this out on Monday morning. And
this
that
will be out, it's Sunday night, Monday morning, so there'll
so
be one day left
one
of the
day
sale.
Left of our biggest sale we've ever done. We've got silly amounts of back issues, 2 for $1. Graphic novels are reduced to an insane amount of price. Not all graphic novels, but a majority of
them. Not The Age of Apocalypse?
I don't even know if I have it in stock
anymore. I think I bought them all.
Yeah, Davis might have bought me out of Age of Apocalypse. But yeah, it's a big sale on all kinds of other select items.
And where is
it? It's at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
And you can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. That is the official Cavendish Comics Twitter feed. You can listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can listen to every episode of Caffeinated Comics on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. Davis, how do we find you?
I mean, not really that much, but every once in a while I do a podcast called The Inglorious Film Nerds with my friend Sue Habe. We're trying to do it bi-weekly. We haven't done one in a couple of weeks, but we're going to get back to it over the summer because finals and all that garbage. But yeah, that'll be Inglorious Film Nerds. Just search it on YouTube. You'll probably find it. We'll probably do it over the summer.
Great. So, and we'll be back next week with our coverage of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to you then.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!